Welcome to the Creepcast on downrightcreepy.com. We have finally returned. It's good to be back. It's been, Creepcast has been gone. Eric, you did the last one with me. It's probably been like 4 years. So who are we? Who are we?
Existentially?
I'm Casey Canton, so you may know me from downrightcreepy.com and the Creepcast before this. And if you're listening to this, then you've found the website. But also co-founder of Panic Fest with this gentleman sitting in the room with me here, Adam Roberts. Adam, who are you? Tell our listeners. What do you do for a living?
I am Adam Roberts. I am co-founder of Panic Film Fest.
You also happen to own a movie theater, I believe.
I own a movie theater and an arcade and a Halloween pop-up bar.
Yeah.
And I sometimes make movies.
That's
and he has an adorable doggy.
Eric.
I guess I didn't start Panic Fest, so sometimes I go to Panic Fest.
Eric has attended Panic Fest at least two times. He's also a filmmaker. He's been contributing to Downright Creepy almost since the beginning, off and on. And he's the writer of Call Girl and The Stylist, which we'll get into here in a minute in the news section. Some great news about that.
And some books, too. Don't forget about my books.
Yes.
Nobody remembers my books. Nobody.
Well, I actually thought about them yesterday when I was eating a sandwich.
Books.
If he keeps these up, if he sells like one a week, writes 100 books, he'll make $100 a week, and then he'll make $400 a month, and then he can quit his job.
It was also funny because I just said, hey, tell me a little bit about yourself. He's like, I don't want to. Hey, don't forget about my books.
Well, he's written a lot of – you were on a tear for a minute.
Yeah. Now I'm just kind of sad.
Oh.
Go to
Holmes.
We just wrote something together, Adam and I.
It's not sad. It's silly.
It's good.
It's funny.
It's going to be out in the world, right?
Comedy horror.
Oh, it's comedy first, then horror.
And I'm going to act in it.
And he's going to act in it.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I can't wait for this.
This is an exclusive.
Breaking news. What's the working title of this?
Are those your kneecaps?
Yeah, sorry. I can't sit. No, those are my boobs.
Those are giant hot dogs.
For the audio people podcast, we have video where we can see each other. So.
Yeah.
Because I'm not with them. I'm in Lawrence, Kansas.
We're in Kansas City, Missouri, in a snuff dungeon. So.
Yeah. But what's the title of our movie?
I don't think it has a title right now. There's a title on it, but it's not even close to what it should be. It's an untitled horror comedy.
Okay. It'll be good. Look, we'll let you know.
All right. Well, I hope you keep that name for the release. I think that would be great and unique. So anyway, that's us. We're back. We're going to be talking about It Chapter 2 today, and hopefully the podcast won't be as long as that movie.
It's already starting with the zings.
That scene with music that makes no sense. So I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. You can follow along on Twitter at Downright Creepy. And if you use the hashtag Ask the Creeps, and you can comment about stuff we're saying to tell us that we're wrong.
Probably mostly that.
Mostly that. No one's going to get on and say, great job. You're going
to get on. That's not what the internet's about.
So Ask the Creeps if you want to do that on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, all that good stuff, at Downright Creepy. But let's get on to today's show, where we're going to go back to Deary, Maine, and talk about Pennywise. And before we get into the review, I wanted to talk about a couple of news items here. Mm-hmm. So let's get into the news feed first. Okay, Resident Evil 2. I just ran across this week. I thought it was pretty cool mod. You guys play video games? Who plays video games?
I play video games.
Eric, you used to play video games.
I have a Nintendo Switch. I've been playing Link's Awakening lately.
That counts. Okay. Well, they brought Resident Evil 2 back, and they like remastered it, which was kind of a surprise. I think it was at E3 this year, but it was announced like in 2018 or something like that.
Is that the one with the like subway and stuff, like the train? Yeah. Is that 2?
Yeah. Raccoon City.
Yeah.
So they brought that to life, and everyone was super stoked because it was like PlayStation 2, I think, for the original.
Back when I played.
No, I think it was on PlayStation 1.
Yeah, you might have been right.
Double disc PlayStation 1.
Dang.
So you're like fighting a monster and it's like, please pause and insert second disc?
No, it was just very dramatic. It was like that in Metal Gear Solid. I remember you got to like an epic point and it was like, please insert disc.
I do remember Metal Gear Solid actually.
We find the discs, I guess.
It's like Titanic. Got to put in the fourth VHS tape. We all did that.
I remember.
Back to Resident Evil 2. So they redid it. It looks beautiful. It looks gorgeous. But a YouTuber that goes by the name of Marcos RC decided he would do a mod on it and actually put Pennywise in for where Mr. X is in the game. So he like busts through a door and usually Mr. X stalks you. But now it's Pennywise. Mm-hmm. And they've also put in this kind of creepy clown carny music. But he's just constantly smiling. So the mod looks great. The idea is great. There's no real expression in the clown, so it feels like it is on PlayStation 2 because it's just kind of, it's a little blocky.
Yeah.
But it's still cool that Pennywise all of a sudden is in Raccoon City. And they got the fairground kind of carnival music playing. And so in the gameplay that you have, which you can look up on downrightcreepy.com, just look for Pennywise mod. Or you can look on YouTube on that Marcos RC. But you can wail away on him and just like shoot him. There's no expression on his face. Keeps laughing, keeps coming at you. I don't know how you actually kill him.
Maybe an RPG with four bullets.
Which makes sense.
Bullets.
But anyway, I thought that was really cool idea. There's been other mods. There was a mod of the Joker shooting at Pennywise. So he basically took the place of
Leon like, Kennedy.
Yes. As like Leon.
Clown on clown. So I thought
that violence. Was pretty interesting. What was that, Eric?
It's clown on clown violence.
Well, yeah, and perfect timing for Pennywise versus the Joker since the Joker is about to come out.
Yeah.
So many clowns. What do you guys think about that? Lots of clowns.
I don't know.
I mean, we all wear masks, metaphorically speaking. That's from the 1996 hit film. Sorry, no, it might be 95. The Mask. Did you know that movie also came out the same year? Not real horror related at all. The Mask and Ace Ventura 1 came out the same year.
Man.
Really?
That's a crazy year for Jim Carrey. That's
pinnacle career.
Anyways, I always like that quote. We all wear masks, metaphorically speaking.
It's great. It's very fitting for the Joker. And I would love it if they actually stole that line and put it in the Joker.
Yeah, or Batman says it.
True.
There's actually a similar line, I think, in Tim Burton's Batman
about wearing a
mask. I think it might be Batman Returns.
Yeah.
Every Tim Burton movie ever, I think.
Yeah.
That line is.
Yeah.
Side notes.
But yeah, it doesn't matter. It's all about clowns this episode anyway. So yeah, I wanted to bring that up. That was really cool for anyone out there.
I like that it took a remaster like 17 years later from the game, or more than that probably, like 20 years later. For someone to be like, let's just mod this when they could have done it, you know,
with anything,
anytime. Yeah,
it'd be interesting to see if anyone did. It's just YouTube didn't exist, so we didn't actually get to or
people
see it.
People weren't caring about Resident Evil 2 until the remaster.
They were downloading on LimeWire, like Resident Evil 2 mods.
I have one peer, and this thing is 4 gigs. My dial-up can handle it.
At the end of the week, we're gonna watch it. So I thought that was cool, but let's get into something that's way cooler than that, and Eric can talk about this project, but I'll set it up. The Stylist was a short film, 2017?
16, I believe.
2016 is when it debuted. Jill Six. Do we still call her Jill Six?
I'll just call her Jill.
I think she goes either way now. I think she's mostly her full name now.
I was hoping you'd try it. I was really hoping he'd try.
No, I got it. I've stood next to her as she says her name many times. She said Gevorgas in the last time I was next to her, which was...
I think it's Ian. It's more of an Ian at the end.
I said it. I have a deeper voice than you, Eric.
Okay.
I was waiting for Adam to attempt it. But anyway, the Stylist short film back in 2016 is now set to be a feature film
I know.
In 2020.
I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
How did this happen?
You did the EP. Here's your LP.
Yeah. You're freaking out because you helped write the original one. We should tell people that. And you guys had a Kickstarter going that's probably ending right about now, I would guess.
And as we record this, we have like 2 hours left. So if you can magically hear us live somehow,
that'd be
incredible. Picking us up on a CB radio.
Yeah. The original goal was $46,500.
Yeah.
Last time I checked, you're at 55,000
plus. Yeah, it's nuts. Like, I was texting with Jill when we were getting really close to the goal, and we ended up getting... Huh?
The stretch goal?
No, before we hit the, main goal, I was texting with her. And we got like $7,000 in like 3 seconds. And I still don't understand how that happened.
If I was like a very wealthy person and I was just like waiting to see, I would love to be like the guy who dumps, like you hit your goal and you're like, man, anything extra is awesome. Awesome. I'm the guy who drops like $30,000 right. Like last 5 minutes. You're like, whoa, what is this guy? Why didn't he come earlier? But
just hit every stretch goal. Yeah.
Every time a campaign just hits it and is a little over, you're like, here, let me cover all those taxes for you. Or, you know, taxes and fees. Here you go. Boom.
Yeah. Craft services.
You have a $1 million budget.
All of a sudden, yeah.
But yeah, it's been we started the feature script when we were touring with the short. So it's been years since we've been piecing it together. I think my last, because she had Eric Stoles, is that Stoles?
Yeah. Yep.
Had him come in to do it past two, because we finished a version, I don't know, a while ago and pitched it around. Had interest, had offers that fell through, you know, whole experience of celebrating a deal that falls through and then going through all that. And he came in and punched it up based on notes and stuff and added some things. And I just read that version pretty much when the Kickstarter started, and it's great. So I'm excited to see this. And I don't know. I should have no doubts in Jill at this point, but when she put $46,000 requested, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know, but here we are at $55,000. And that was my final bucket list. So now I can just like sit in my couch and die. That's why I'm not writing so much now, Adam. What else do I do? What do I do?
Well, you're going to start production on that. When is it? The beginning of the year?
Yeah, start January, off? I think, is when it starts shooting.
Adam's taking photos of our roster.
When is it supposed to start, principal?
Like the second, third week of January, something like that. I think it's like 3-4 weeks of shooting. All right. Yeah. That's off the top of my head, though. I could be wrong. I'm just the writer.
He actually had to kick in to get a set.
I think you could talk a little. I mean, I guess we might have Jill on here at some point, but yeah. You have, you know, some crowd favorites in the film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we would like
actresses.
Yeah, we got, is it Bree or Brea?
Brea.
Yeah.
Brea Grant. Najara Townsend.
Yeah. Najara's coming back as Claire. And we got a local act. I think they've only cast 3 people so far. And
yeah.
We have some more work to do on that front. So.
And a featured extra because of the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
We've also casted that.
I better be an extra this time, too. I was in the short, so I better be in this.
I heard you had an uncredited role as the scalp in this. Is that true?
Like the scalp? Like I was just selling tickets?
No, like the guy. Have you read your own script? Do you know what it's about? Do you know what the stylist is about?
It's about a guy who scalps tickets, right?
Yeah, the scalper. At a barber shop.
I want to see the scalper. I mean, if it's similar to the draft I read years ago, there's plenty of extras towards the end.
Yeah, there's lots. I mean, there's no.
If I'm shortage. Not sitting there holding Spoiler your hand alert. At the end, I'm pissed.
That's true. Yeah, I need to be in. Yeah, I mean, not to be a spoiler, but there's definitely some scenes with in the public. So you could have.
Yeah, the last act has a pretty cool scene, and we should be a couple in an Eric.
Can we? Oh, please, we need to talk to Jill about this.
I would say I feel like
it could be a throuple, but I would.
You got the leverage, Eric. You got the leverage. I'll go ahead and up my backing right now if you can make it happen.
Yeah, I'll add $5. Like,
you're gonna
combine. We'll throw in $10 together. Again,
okay.
Well, congratulations.
Yes,
it's one of the hardest things in the world to do. And
yeah, sorry, I'm not a better.
You guys did it.
And I'm sorry, I'm not a better, like more insightful on it. I'm just like in real time. That really just happened yesterday, so I'm still kind of like in shock that this is still happening. So
yeah, it's fantastic.
I've been like, just as a personal, like I've won, sounds braggy, but it's not like, but I won my first like screenplay award in like, I think like 2007, 2006. And that's when I first started getting meetings and stuff. So I've been in these meetings and these promises and these like productions, and, like we can do this, let's do all this for like over a decade now. So for something to actually happen, it's like, I don't know what to do with this information right now. It's nuts.
Now you sit back and you relax for like a week and then you got to get back to work. So.
Yeah. Well, that's the great thing about being a writer is there's no more on this particular project. I'm done. I just get to walk through and like, hey, and that's it.
I mean, So you know you're going to sit there on set. They're going to turn to you and be like, what's a better way to say this line? Yep.
Will you guys watch it with me? Will you come to the premiere with me?
Well, I hope to be your date in the movie and at the premiere.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll even be one day at my theater.
Yeah. Let's do that.
You have to invite us.
Okay.
All right. It's on the podcast now, so you have to. All right. Should we get into more clown business?
Let's clown around.
Let's clown around a little bit with chapter two.
What's that, like four bad jokes?
What'd you say to me?
I'm just like, Adam's already in, like four bad jokes in, and it's been like 20 minutes.
Crowd favorites, so whatever you think.
We just got a Patreon follower out of that, so I don't know what your problem is, Eric. You need to step it up.
$5 for me. We should, if we ever have a Patreon, I hope we have a Patreon. Yeah. It's all $5 across the board, but it's like for each of the cast members.
It's got a note attached to it.
Yeah, I mean, it goes to the whole podcast, but just to see your favoritism, I'd like to see Eric's at zero.
Wow.
So that's funny.
We're going to knock you back down. You're too gloaty about yourself right now. It's like, let's not talk about my books and let's, this thing I just got funded. Let's knock him down a level.
He's like, I don't want to talk about anything. Don't forget about my books. I won a Screen Actor Award or Screenplay Award in 2006 or 2006.
A Golden Lion in 2016.
That's a big deal.
One of cans.
So, yeah. No, but if we have a Patreon at any point, make sure he remains at zero.
Yeah, it's Eric and Tim. Just make sure you donate to that on Patreon or on Anchor FM, where you can support the podcast.
I don't know any of the words you just said, but I appreciate them. I'm clicking around.
Click, click, ching. Hey, It Chapter 2. Pennywise is back after 27 years or 2 years later. Kind of like our podcast. So it all comes around. And it's going to be spoiler review.
Yeah,
all spoilers. Been out for a little while. And really all of the podcasts that we do are going to be spoiler reviews because I don't like talking about movies and not spoiling them.
Yeah, it's kind of dumb.
It's fine to write about it, but when I'm talking on a podcast, I just want to talk about the movie, not worry about it. So
unless it's like a movie that has yet to have a release.
Like a South By release.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't come out for like 2 years.
If it's like more, if it's available for you to, especially if it's a big release, you should give like, you got 10 days. And if you don't.
As long as we say it's spoiler before we start talking, like, what do they expect? Back off.
Here we go.
So I think we should start with this being a story that's being told 27 years later. They obviously had kids in the first one and then adults cast in the second one. And that casting had to be done, I feel like, very delicately. I felt like as soon as we heard that it was going to be the adults, which everyone knew if you knew the story, people started speculating, you know, who's going to be cast as who for the kids. And I think there was some worry that they were going to get two biggest celebrities casted in that. And I think in some ways it happened for some of them, but we can talk about that. But overall, I thought the casting was super strong. I thought that they cast people that actually looked like the kids. Mm. So I thought they did really well on that. And it was interesting to hear that the kids actually had some input on that.
They did.
Like Bill Hader playing Tozier's character.
Richie.
Yeah, Richie's character. So that was interesting that he specifically like requested him. So that was pretty strong. Even down to like they got very detailed. Like even the dumb little bitch in the pharmacy that was nasty.
The one that wrote Loser on his cast.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That was teasing Bev at school too. Like they got her perfect as an adult. And you see it even in the flashback.
It wasn't just the same lady.
Right, yeah.
It's nuts.
Like she aged really bad 2 years later. she is in a pharmacy. She could be just taking
opioids. I have a logistical question. You guys know. You guys are follow this stuff. Like, did they shoot the kid stuff during the first movie, or did they have them back in like?
So they actually.
This is terrible.
Take it away. De-aged the, well, at least Finn Wolfhard. Well, him and so Eddie and Richie are both aged. The guy who plays Eddie, and you could really tell if you know it's happening. Eddie's voice is like digitally reduced.
Yeah,
because he went through puberty and his voice dropped like a couple octaves. And
so now he's like,
they, like brought him back the other octaves. You can tell it's like pretty synthesized. His voice.
It's like auto tune.
What's that?
Is it like auto tune?
It's like digital.
How are you guys?
And Finn, you can tell someone's off.
Oh, Finn was the worst when they de-aged him because he looked like a
mask.
It looked like a cartoon. It looked like an animated cartoon because his eyes and his glasses felt super
imposed.
They felt super imposed. They felt more magnified than they should have been. And like his face and cheeks and stuff when he was moving around, and like,
but he
barely looks like he was even in the movie, let alone just like de-aged in the movie. It just almost felt like CGI Finn as Richie Tozier.
I think they, for as like awkward as some of those moments were, I think they shouldn't have. I mean, it's been 2 years, they should have just rolled with it. They also could have made it, like,
I don't think it would have mattered too much.
The next year, there wasn't like a ton with Pennywise that reflected. They could have like literally been like, all right, they've actually grown up literally a year later, like they filmed it and it's the next summer. Instead they're like, no, this is the same summer, this is just that weird month we didn't show you before for no reason. And a lot of shit actually happened in that weird month, but here it is, here's all the exposition of that stuff, that the summer that changed everybody. We just breezed over it and didn't talk about it in the first movie
because
we're bad filmmakers.
But
it was just like so silly, like nothing they did there really, because Pennywise was,
but couldn't they have just
like didn't really have the impact he needed to have? They could have done all those flashbacks post Pennywise. I think it would have been just as impactful, or maybe more impactful, and they wouldn't have the awkward CGI. But the kids also still, I think, carry the movie, even though they
weren't
necessary to the film.
I mean, there was a part I was going to get to here in a minute, but Stanley during his bar mitzvah, like that was one of the best scenes of the movie. I felt like his speech was pretty emotional, and then it, like, start tying together their relationships and kind of brings it, centers it again before you can get back into the adult. But it's the flashback of Hader going into the church and reliving that moment as they're all going through and reliving their moments as kids. And that was one of my favorite scenes in the movie, actually, was that scene. The pacing of the comedy when it gets introduced into scenes, like, I'm fine with comedy in it. It's not that. It's just, they don't really lay a line down of when they're going to use it. It just can happen at any time.
Both as a kid and adult.
Yeah.
Because they're like, Finn and Bill Hader are both great. And so let's just let Richie be Richie. Well, before we go there,
because
you brought up Stanley.
Yeah.
In the book, Stanley's death is like a pretty impactful moment. In the movie, they're just like, yeah, Stanley died. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then they're like, anyways, you guys want to go to the, like, whatever, Mongolian barbecue?
Yeah.
And it's like, they don't even, like, even acknowledge him. They call it as, like, widow for, like, 5 seconds.
They're eating at the Chinese restaurant, and they're like, where'd he go? Oh, he's not here. And then one of them's like, oh, he's dead.
Because, and not only is he dead, he fucking killed himself, man. Like, you're not talking about it at all. He's not dead. He killed himself. And they're like, let's just, you guys want to call it, we're all drunk, we should probably call his, like, widow, right now? And that's the only time they ever talk about it. Like, I don't know, one of our six best friends murdered himself and we're just never going to acknowledge it again. Anyways, I have all these feelings I didn't talk to you about, Bev.
Well, there was...
Dude, your friend literally murdered himself.
And only Bev talks to her.
Yeah.
Like, nobody else really even talks to her, which... Sorry, Eric, we're not trying to shut you out here. I feel like we're not letting you get in here. But I was going to say, the phone call happens, and like you said, they don't really discuss it again after that, but the entire time they all basically are like, oh, we almost forgot we grew up here. I thought that was a little weird too. Like, just in general with
Eric,
the story.
Have you read the book?
When I was like 12. So I
know.
Yeah. It's been a long time for me too. Have you read it, Tim?
It's ages ago.
Yeah. It's been, but I do recall
that they have that tone in the book.
It happens early on. Obviously the book's flashing back and forth
more
often in the beginning. Them forgetting seem to be very breezed over, whereas in the book it's like they kind of explain more why that they, like, the movie almost like goes by that so quickly that it doesn't make quite as much sense as it does in the book. Whereas in the book you're like, oh, they're all survivors of trauma who have blocked out what happened to them. In the movie, it's like, we don't know why we don't remember. I just can't remember. Anyways, oh, here it comes. Now I remembered everything. But in the book, it's like, no, this horrible thing happened to all of us, and I grew out of it, and I blocked that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just done differently. It's just like a kind of a major thing. Like, them as adults was them as survivors of trauma.
Yeah.
Whereas in the movie, I don't feel like that resonated at all. Eric?
Well, I think the biggest problem with the movie, you're right, but like the biggest problem, well, not even the biggest problem, but the thing that stuck out to me is that there's no stakes in the second movie at all. Like, nothing matters. Like,
in the book, from what I, like you were saying, it flashes back and forth. So the kids carry the film even in the book, and the terror that they feel when they're a kid has the like parallel, like right then where like you're talking about, it's the trauma that the adults are dealing with of this chapter you just read that they experienced as a child. So it's kind of paired that way. Well, this, we saw everything that happened in the last film with the kids, and that was great, and it worked, and that movie was great. This one, there's like no stakes. It's like the same thing over and over.
It fully again, feels no like threat a remake, to I think. It feels like a remake with adults. And yeah. I mean, and it,
without the threat, like there's really no, like they've already gone through all this.
Yeah. He's, I mean, like scene by scene, it feels such a remake. And I remember I told one of you guys as soon as I was leaving, I was like, I'm not going to spoil anything, but whereas the first one felt like Nightmare on Elm Street, this one feels like Nightmare on Elm Street 5.
Yeah.
And like Pennywise is not scary anymore. He's a big cartoon, and there's set pieces now where he's in, instead of him just in a house or in a room. It's like really treated
the
as
carnival,
a cartoon type of scene. Yeah. I mean, yeah, him as Paul Bunyan, it was like, what in the fuck are we doing in that scene? Like, yeah, cut that scene out. Why is that even in the movie? It doesn't really, like, there's just so many like, well, fragmented segment scenes. And speaking, like, Pennywise is a caricature of himself in the first film. And as good as Skarsgård is here, he's just like, given on a script level, it's very much what happened to Freddy Krueger. I just like feel like he's not scary. He's laughable. He's trying to be funny.
Yeah. And this movie starts off, part two starts off with such a brutal, like terrible scene. Like I had hard.
That's what I was going to bring up. Yeah.
Like it was a terrible scene to watch. And well, they made him such a threat. And then like the whole movie, he's this, yeah, like you're saying, like he's this cartoon for the rest of the time. He doesn't do anything.
It like starts out
after that, or the scariest scene after that is when that random little girl under the bleachers.
Yeah.
Which felt like they added after, because they're like, this movie's not scary. Let's literally add a scene that has no context and no purpose whatsoever.
Yeah.
There's no characters in that scene. There's nobody at the game. We're just cutting to a random football game and a small child in a standalone sequence, just because they're like, this movie hadn't been scary for 45. There's no way that was in the script, right?
I feel like I absolutely didn't really even think about it at the time, but you're right. There's no, it doesn't, they don't circle back to it. There's no context to it. But now that I'm kind of thinking about it, Eric, to your point, it's such a brutal, like grounded in reality type of scene that we start with. And then that's when we get Pennywise, which if you think about it in parallel to the first one, we have that exact same like cringeworthy tug at your heartstrings type of scene one way or the other with Georgie getting his arm ripped off. And then in this one, with we've got, girl. No, well, I'm talking about just the in general. Crime. Yeah, the hate crime and then Georgie.
Well, I think the hate crime
those are the first two things we see that are like super heavy. Yeah. But then I felt like in chapter two, they almost did it like, here's an adult, here's a kid, because we're doing adults and kids now. And we're showing like each of those people being attacked in some way.
Well, in the first one, you have Mike gets beat up and it's a racial thing.
Yeah.
And then now it's 27 years later, you know, it's not about race anymore. It's about like your sexual orientation or what have you, in any way you want to put that. And that scene's in the book. And I remember like Stephen King like says that was based on like an actual story that happened in Maine, this like terrible hate crime. But in the movie, it's like, I'm fine with the scene, but it's like 12 minutes long. And that's like kind of that scene kind of sets the tone for the big problems in this movie, is that they didn't look at anything like for time or finding a better way to do it.
Yeah.
That scene is just as impactful, starting with Mike reading in the newspaper about a horrible hate crime.
Well,
having him go down and find remnants of the balloon. We don't need to see Pennywise eating the guy.
Well,
to see the hate crime.
The hate crime has nothing to do with the movie. Like you're saying, it's just people being terrible. Like Pennywise just shows up at the end and takes a bite, and that's it.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with
anything
them.
There, like at no point we're like, oh, Pennywise coerced this kid, like he did the other kid who tried to murder them later on. And that's another big problem that doesn't translate in the movie, that did okay in the book, the subplot of him breaking out and becoming a serial killer that's quickly stopped. It's just like they wanted to keep so much from the book, I think, that's just problematic. And you don't need, like, I appreciate them having the hate crime and like what that's saying about our current state of affairs. But like, you could do that in like, Mike sees an article and goes down to check the scene out and finds remnants of a balloon. Sure. And it's like, oh, Pennywise must have been here. That's scarier than us seeing Pennywise laughing, eating arm, waving arm. It was such a for such a dark opening, it turned very silly very quickly, and it was 15 minutes long in an almost 3-hour movie. It's, if you need to cut anything, there's a better way on a script to do the same story, I think, without being so grotesque.
I would have been fine keeping that scene, and like we just talked about, just cut the little girl out of the bleachers. Like, at least that scene opening with it sets the tone to be like, oh, he's back, and it's dark. And I didn't even really take it as silly. I mean, it's a clown with balloons and he's laughing. So I didn't take the hate crime scene ever taking a turn to silly, because I think it's so, you know, kind of a shocking, appalling moment that you're watching. It was hard for me to be like, oh, it got silly there. But well, to like your point,
parade of balloons that go by.
Yeah, it's a little much. Like, there's a little too much.
Like, there. If we didn't see that and we just have Mike, like, what
or
is
just this? One if balloon.
Mike was just obsessed with murders happening, and then he goes and checks out like where the murder happened, and he finds a balloon.
Yeah,
that's all we need as an audience. That's 2 minutes, probably 3 minutes, instead of nearly 15-minute sequence where we're like, oh, Pennywise is back, and Mike is insane and obsessed with like making sure this doesn't happen. And when he finds the balloon, like, I liked all that. That was fine.
Yeah.
It just took so long. And that's like, there's so many sequences.
Yeah, it did take
like,
a while.
Like, when they go find all their totems, and their totems in the book don't really add up to anything. And in this, they literally don't add up to anything. It's like, that's 45 minutes. It felt very Avengers Endgame, like the middle of that movie where they're just like, we're just going around doing time travel stuff. And it's
cool. And like,
but like, it doesn't. The reason I think we like the first film is because the group as a whole was great. In this movie, they make it a point to single out every character away from each other.
Which the they best do scene in the first
is,
one.
Is the Chinese sequence where they're having Chinese food, because they're all together. After that, they're like, all right, we're going to go meet up for one more scene. And then everyone's in their own sequence.
They do that in the first one, as they introduce how the kids see Pennywise. This one, I liked scenes of the film, but not necessarily as a whole. Like, there's certain scenes I really love. Like, I brought up Stanley's bar mitzvah scene. I even like the first one because, like, the first scene that we were just talking about, because it's kind of daring you to look away, like, daring you to watch, because it's brutal. Like, it's hard to watch. Just like when I saw Georgie get his arm ripped off in the first one, that was tough for me because I just had a kid. Yeah. So that changed your perspective on it. But were you going to say something, Eric?
I was just, I think I'm way behind now, but like the beginning, what didn't work is, like I was trying to say, is that hate crime has nothing to do with the return of Pennywise. Like, in the first movie, those older kids start killing people and start chasing them around because Pennywise starts talking to them and influencing them. If it was that, then that would be the return of Pennywise. Instead, we just get a lynching that could happen in any city and then some balloons floating by. And that doesn't work thematically at all. Like, it's just, we watched 15 minutes of this brutality and Pennywise is basically fishing or whatever down there and some guy floats by and he's right. That's it. So,
well, I think
I just think like this, what works so good about the first movie is like the whole arc is about them facing their own trauma and their own fear. And these kids growing up and like learning to embrace trauma and fear and overcome it. And the second movie.
All of them grow up to be incredibly successful.
I know. Yeah. I made that comment too.
Yeah, that was the other weird thing.
And you're like, motherfucker, everybody here is rich besides Mike, who's like in an attic of a library. And everyone else is just like, I don't know, man. I've written like the 15 biggest movies of the last 10 years. And
I know. Like, one of them has to work at Hardee's or something.
But does he own the library? Like, he might own the library.
I've never really clarified, like, how is he up there?
So, like, sure, he lives in the attic, but he owns a fucking library.
Here's the point, though. He has to own the library because they literally murder a person in the lobby and nothing happens.
Yeah, good point.
Also, there's never staff in there. He's not even working. It's just, like, come as you go.
Like, it's a large, like, take a book, leave a book library on the corner.
For as much as time as they spend on so many things, they
okay, I had a thought when this got silly at the end. See if you guys, is like Pennywise just like a really extreme therapist?
He's just working everybody's problems out.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to tease you with what scares you, what's really fucked up in your head.
Yeah, because at the end, remember when we can talk about the end and spoil the end a little, but he takes a minute and he looks like proud and he's like, you've really grown up at the end when he says that to him.
Well, yeah, I think that's toward the beginning too. He's like, I've missed you.
Like, so right. I think he's just like, he's doing like what's the guy's name in Saw? Like, I think he's just doing a little like life lessons.
Jigsaw, he's doing.
Yeah, this is like therapy lessons. Extreme.
So I think bringing the end up is a good
point of something that I was going to talk about, which is the CGI in this in general. We talked about a little bit with the de-aging. You talked about a little bit with Paul Bunyan. And then, of course, in the end, it's just CGI fest. But and here's the thing.
Well, the director of Mama, I don't expect anything less.
We've like, also...
That movie had a lot of suspect CGI where they should just
kept
stuff off screen in the shadows. Or done it. There's so much in Mama and in this.
It's just dresses and like wavy things. Like, yeah. You can do that practical. The thing that we're in an era now where it's so common that we're getting used to it, and it can be done. It can be done really well.
Yeah.
But it also can be unnecessary, like you just brought up with Mama. And I thought in this particular scene with the old woman, which we see in the trailer, right? Like, we see the whole thing play out in the trailer almost. And the worst part they left out of the trailer, which is the CGI when the woman is, it's building all this tension. It's a really cool scene, I thought. That's one of the scenes I really liked.
Until it isn't. CGI mess.
Until all of a sudden this gangly, really very tall woman is running out.
Woman in the first one.
Yeah.
Similar CGI, like very horribly cartoonish.
I completely forgot about that scene in the first one. But if we would have seen that as a practical effect and you would have given me like the woman in the Shining bathtub, the same idea, general idea.
Even like the rat monster in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
Like, or any of those vampires, like they're very grotesque and similar. And you can find a like very frail looking person to do that.
I mean, it's her, really. You could have just used her and sped up the scene a little bit where it looks like she's running a little faster.
Yeah, but a little contortion or something.
Yeah, that really annoyed me more than almost anything else, because we can suspend belief with Pennywise, and we've already seen some CGI. It still got a little over the top for me, because there's some cool stuff that Skarsgård does on his own that looks really cool with the character, and that's why he's so good as Pennywise. And kind of at this point, you always thought, like, no one's going to replace Tim Curry. Now I'm kind of like, well, no one could really replace him if they were to continue it, which something about that scene also was when they start going into the origin story of him and like, oh, my father was in the circus or whatever. We start seeing those photos on the wall. I would love to see Skarsgård again play Pennywise in an episodic like TV series that continues to go backwards 27 years, and we see it play out almost in different eras. And if you did it episodically,
until it's just a cosmic being.
Yeah, until it's just eight episodes of just space. And it's like kind of seeing stuff.
It just starts with the universe going.
That's how it ends. It's Benjamin Button, basically. But would you guys be interested in some sort of TV series if you could keep
Skarsgård? I don't know if I care about the origin. I mean, we were kind of told the origin.
Yeah.
I think I'm interested to see, like, so in the book, it starts in the 50s and it goes to the 80s. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested to see, because this starts in the 80s and it's every 27 years. I'd like to see the 50s or the early 60s. I'd like to see it go to, like, maybe, like, 1900, like a random time period where there's no technology, really, and it's not, like, a fun period.
Yep.
Where it's a little bit more timeless, or even like
seeing the
30s, seeing like what the Native Americans were like, they touch upon in the book and in the movie. I like to see that stuff. I think that'd be more horrifying to see.
Yeah.
Because they're like these, you know,
it's more gritty.
Yeah. It's like more simplistic times and people.
Mm-hmm.
And how like horrifying it is. Like, all we're trying to do is eat and like, you know, stay dry out here, and this motherfucker's coming and eating us. Like, you know
what they didn't have in the 1930s? CGI, guys.
You know, I just want to see I want to see a Pennywise Western now, really bad.
Right?
Oh, I'd kill for that. Civil War Pennywise, let's do it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we keep going back far enough and it just gets more and more interesting, I feel like. And
I feel like
cross sections of like Edgar Allan Poe randomly.
But would he still be a clown? Back to Future 3 time frame, and I don't like it. I hate that movie. And it feels like we're going to get that. I mean, they've hinted that they're maybe going to do a prequel, right?
They've hinted at it that Michetti said, like, he doesn't anticipate any more films, but that doesn't mean that maybe he's not a producer on a TV show, right? Like, overseas, because he's in the universe at this point. I don't know. I'd like to see it on the right network, bringing it to life for like 3 seasons. You know, don't overdo it. Like, give me 3 seasons. That's far enough back in like the timeline we just discussed to do something.
But is it the similar problem of like, I mean, maybe it's not. I was going to say, maybe it's like like prequels are really tough, I think, because you know inevitably where it's going to end up.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's just being able to, in this scenario at least, seeing it play out in different eras.
Yeah.
Is the most, and how it could cross different pieces of history.
Yeah. And weave that I think in. What's hard Maybe. Here is that people really liked it so much because it, you know, it did fall out after this massive Stranger Things, like Amblin kind of like resurgence. And I think without the kids completely, and I think the second one, they're like, holy crap, we need to add more kids because everyone loved the kids and the group dynamic. I think if you erase all the characters from this, I'm curious how much their love there is for actually a clown story, which I'm guessing there's very little like excitement, especially seeing how this ends up where it's a cosmic being and it's represented in a spider form and all these kind of like sillier ideas. Very sci-fi things. I'm curious if anybody actually cares about seeing Pennywise before this, because with no kids or anything.
It's also interesting because you have Finn and you reference Stranger Things, and then he's in this, basically this, the height of his fame, bringing it in. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if we were to have just seen, and of course this isn't the story in the book, but if we were just to have seen the adult version, like it's probably not nearly the craze.
You probably don't get a sequel.
You don't get a box office like you do the first time. And it,
well, you didn't get a box office like you did the first time.
The second time, yeah. But it still made like $90 million, right? And it was $100 million for the first one. Wasn't it close to
the
that?
First one made is...
Well, I mean, the first one... I mean,
they're still number one, number two for the all-time...
For horror.
Yeah, R-rated horror.
Yeah.
I want to talk about what really just drives me nuts is that this movie accomplishes... It doesn't add anything. It doesn't accomplish anything. And well, that, to me, is...
It does to the Pennywise mythology.
Only. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
That's 3 minutes.
Yeah, and that's all exposition at the very end. But and, I mean, before that, even before that, like you're correct. Like it's
well, we find out Beverly, everyone's got a great job.
Here's Bev now.
Well, they go through all this like totem stuff and this box and all this like mythology, and like at the end, it's just we just have to beat them like we did the first time.
Yeah.
But it's and also, like, and someone like, mentioned
why
that.
Being such a dick, if you just say, let's go kick his ass again like we did the first time and not waste all of our time here. We're all rich people with very busy schedules. Just tell us like it is, man. We'll do it. I mean, it's they also make Mike a weird bad guy because there, he does that.
Is there a worse climax in movie history than everyone just calling the villain bad names till he shrinks to
You're mean. You're small.
I know. That was the other... It's funny because overall, like, I didn't hate this movie, but we are talking a lot about like, oh, this didn't work or this didn't work. And that's, I think that's why when I said earlier, like I liked scenes, but as a whole, I didn't. And God damn it, the end of it, the CGI, the way that Mike is randomly like saying jokes when his friend's laying there dying and says like, fuck your mom, and then runs off. And there's like, there's a giant fucking spider here and you're dropping jokes, your friend's dying, and also the only way we can kill this guy is to like be a schoolyard bully. Like the whole last 30 minutes, I was so uninterested at that point that I was ready for it to be over. But I will say I didn't feel like I sat in the theater for almost 3 hours.
Oh really? I checked my watch a few times.
Yeah.
I went back twice.
And I think
I was ready to walk out.
They knew how bad like how many jokes in this movie about that guy not being able to write endings, like how many inside winks.
I hadn't even put
that together, but yeah, you're right. Like, I didn't put it together.
I was like, Stephen King loved this movie too. And I'm like, does he love it because it's just like an inside joke about how people think he can't write endings?
Yeah. But, and then just, or maybe it's just a warning, like, hang on to your seats, everybody.
Yeah, it's getting silly. The one scene, there's not very much scary stuff in this movie. And one of the only sequences that I feel like is scary is the when Eddie goes to the basement of the pharmacy and he confronts the leper, and the leper is really gross. And it's like, oh my gosh, this scene is insane. Like, it's very creepy and scary. And the leper's coming closer. And it breaks free from the chains, is tackling him. He fights back. And it's like, oh my God, this is like a pure intense moment. There's not a hint of comedy. And then like, for whatever the fuck reason, and I saw it, a couple weeks before release, and I was like, surely that's changing. This isn't a real thing. No, it ended up in the final cut. It's like they play whatever random 80s song. It's like, baby, come back. And he's getting vomited on by the leper. And I'm like, what is happening? This was like not a comedic scene at all. And it's still not comedic just because you're playing this random, like,
for 3 seconds,
Cyndi Lauper song. and while he's getting like grotesquely vomited on for 3 seconds, it's short, like 13 seconds.
Smash cut to the next quiet, like scene that's fairly quiet.
It does. And he runs away and it's done.
It's jarring.
And you're like, what is this sequence? How did this happen? Did they just have like $30,000 they need to spend on a Cyndi Lauper song?
Yeah, it was like a favor.
It blew me away. I was like, this is the worst directorial choice I've seen all year.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I mean, so many things, if we were to watch this again and probably write it down when it happens, be like, oh, that didn't really have any context.
What did work? Did anything really work for you in the scene that wasn't ruined by an awkwardly written or awkwardly directed scene?
I think the only scene that worked was the one that you think they added later, because it just repeated what worked in the first one, is that little girl being under the bleachers. That's the only scene that still
works. A good standalone sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mentioned it before, I like the bar mitzvah speech, because it kind of brought everything back for each character and did it quick. It wasn't setting with each character in a scene for 5 minutes. It was 5 minutes to see everyone, kind of get this flashback package.
Do you guys think that they're talking about the supercut and all that? Do you think if they edit all this together correctly, it could fix it?
No. No, because you're not going to fix. There's no way they're going to remove that song from that scene. There's no way they're going to.
Yeah. You're right.
They can fix how hokey they made Pennywise this time around.
I mean,
Paul Bunyan. It'll probably make it look worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it'll feel disjointed from the first to second. The transition, there isn't a good transition into it.
I watched the first one the night before I watched the morning I watched the second one. And it was glaring how, like, this is like a case where I think, like, first movie was like fairly cheap, like $30 or $40 million, like fairly cheap to make, and this is like clear, like, oh, it was hugely successful, they got a bigger budget, they got bigger actors, and they just like threw money at everything and made everything too big and too grand, and it's just,
you can also tell,
and the story's not as strong, like it's not, it's like, man, I want to see I'm blanking on his name right now, the guy who was supposed to do the first film, who left the film because of creative differences with WB, the guy who did the first season of True Detective,
Fukunaga.
Yeah.
Wait.
Very fun, Funaka.
Yeah.
Could we just have a podcast where Adam says last names?
I can't say close. It either. So, yeah. True Detective guy.
Yeah, Kerry Funaka. I can't remember how to say his name. Anyways, he wrote the
nailed it.
He wrote the first draft, and he still got a writing credit on the first script. This is all written by, and not that it's a bad thing, and I like a lot of like their films. This is all written by Gary Dauberman, who did the Annabelle films. And Annabelle is fine, but it's hokey. It's a silly, fun, like, it's a thrill ride. It's not a movie about plotting or, like, strong character development. Yeah. Whereas the first film, you could tell it's so much darker and so much more tense. Yeah. And, like, there was a lot more thought out in that first film. This is, like, let's just, like, go to the book and try to make the book as is. And it's fine. I'm sure Stephen King likes it because it's literally his book, right?
That's what I keep saying it, but like, it's just the same movie. Like you're saying, it's a remake. Like the first one worked because it had a theme about trauma and childhood, you know. This was the same thing. Like what would be so interesting is to see a movie about how he like manipulates the fear of adults versus the fear of children. But nope, it's the same thing. It's the same thing over and over again. Like they just, so aggravating. I wanted to love this movie. I really did.
I think everyone was generally disappointed. I mean, I feel like after the movie came out, it was fairly quiet on the internet about it. Like the one before it was like, I mean, people have seen it two or three times. Like people are really enjoying it and like love the characters. And this one's like, well, what's the point of this movie in existence except for it feels like a cash grab. I think this is a circumstance where you should have deviated more from the material. We already had the miniseries that tried all this stuff and failed. I think you should have gone further off.
Yeah, no aliens. Like, no aliens. Let's lose the aliens.
I mean, the aliens are fine, but why not keep it more ambiguous to where it could be more otherworldly rather than like straight up cosmic? It could be
just and I took a bunch of 12-year-old girls to see this for my kid's birthday party, so. They asked the question that I thought was an amazing question. One, like the big well that they all go down in to fight the spider, like was that there in the first movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It was.
They go down the well.
Yep.
They go to the same spot.
Yep.
Yep.
Because I
forgot about it though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and then two, the better question my kid asked is like, who builds an elaborate sewer system and sees a big manhole thing and is like, meh, and just keeps building their sewer and just leave it there.
Well, so the well was actually like they breeze across in the first movie when they find it. It was like from the original settlement of the town. It's been there since the beginning of time, basically. That's the where the comet hit.
Yeah, but like when you're building thing, the big sewer system, is, wouldn't you just like pave over it or something?
Somebody built around it.
Yeah, because they had the basically like the map of all the sewer systems trying to find Georgie.
Yeah,
yeah,
and they were, yeah.
But let us not forget the horribly bizarre, and I didn't like in the book, I didn't like in the miniseries, and I fucking hated it here. The bizarre beat, it was like a C plot. There's so many subplots in this movie, it's insane. But the C or D plot, it only lasts for like randomly 20 minutes, has no like real grand impact, and for sure could have been removed in a script level, is the he didn't die in the first one. We didn't show you, but he didn't die. He's back, and Pennywise is getting in his ear, and he's going to break out very easily whenever he needed to, and he's going to try to kill some people.
Yeah.
And it's like, now there's a dead guy driving him around thing happening that no one's talking about. There's zero fucking cops in this movie. But don't worry, we'll overcome him easily and kill him in like a hotel bathroom. And it's like, what the fuck is this? Yeah, 30-minute sidestep that has nothing to do with anything.
At least in the first one, we hear from the Deary Police Department, and there's like a curfew and all that stuff.
Also,
and
he was fully dead that movie, but like they just never show him again. This one, they're like, oh no, see, we have this scene where he shits shit after that movie ended. He got shit out of everything. All his bones are fine. He got thrown down a fucking well they had to use a rope for. Yeah. He's fine. He swam away. And then he walked home, got arrested. Like, what is this? And then he easily breaks out 27 years later. He couldn't have broke out any time before. I guess Pennywise is back. He, you know, in the miniseries, at least he's the moon. He's like, hello.
He can only come out every 27 years.
Yeah.
It's part of the cosmic.
I fucking hated that.
Well,
moment.
It's a tiny little town, too. It's a tiny little town, and he's got a zombie driving around town square. I think he, like, might report that.
Did you guys enjoy the first one, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really did.
That was great.
What would you rate the first one?
What's our rating scale?
Out of 100, you know, percentage-wise. Eric, you start.
I'll go.
Because you're great at when I put you on the spot.
Yeah, I'm so good at numbers. I'll go first one. I would go 86%.
Solid. Adam?
That's about where I'd put it. Like, I'd say B+ if I was going to do A, B, C.
Yeah.
Like grade school ratings, I'd say B+. So yeah, 85 to 88.
That's exactly where I put it. So I think we're all
this one I'd put in like 60.
Ooh, I'm like, this one is like 22% for me. It was bad.
Oh, I'm going grade. So this is like a D- here.
This is Adam like, had a 72% on his official review.
Yeah.
So he lied. He has since reflected and he dropped it 12%. He's like, man, I hate it more now that I've had a chance to talk about it.
I don't recall anything I really liked. The more I got away from it, the more I like kind of thought a lot was irredeemable and like could have been fixed on a script level and like if they would take more time. And if they did, 3 hours is irresponsible.
That's a strong word.
Because when I first started thinking, when I first left the theater and like had some time to think about it and like the scenes that I did like, I gave it an 80, which was lower than the first one. But now that I've thought about it, much like Adam, I think I'm probably setting more like a 70. Mm. So a C, like it's passing because of the scenes I liked, but as a movie, I didn't like it. But the individual scenes I liked, but yeah, shave like an hour off of this, and I'd probably like it a lot more because you're going to be able to tell the story better and more concise.
Well, and they need something.
That stuff.
They need something for the adults to do instead of just walk through their childhood movie again. That's all this was.
In particular, I think Jessica Chastain was horribly underused. When Bev was such a great character the first
time,
I feel like as an adult, she was very underutilized.
Yeah.
I still thought Amy Adams should have played her just from a standpoint of translating child to adult from a look perspective. And she also played I can't think of the actress's name that plays Bev, but in Sharp Objects,
yeah,
she is her sister.
Oh yeah, no, that wait, but the girl who played Bev is in Sharp Objects.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah.
Oh,
and she actually is in that with her.
Amy Adams. Yeah.
And so I'm like, yeah, they actually look like, she looks more like her character grown up.
Jessica Chastain's the movie quality version of of that same scenario.
Yeah.
Like I love Amy Adams. Amy Adams looks like a real person. Jessica Chastain's a very, she's a great actress. She's just very movie star looking.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I thought, and also I didn't realize that Old Spice guy.
I didn't know that either.
Did you know that Old Spice guy plays Mike?
I didn't know that.
I didn't. It blew my mind. I saw it on like a Facebook thread that we were talking about that, and they're like, "Oh, I'm gonna blow your mind and let you know that Mike is the Old Spice guy." And I was like, "No."
Almost.
Then I look back, I'm like, "Fuck, it is the Old Spice guy."
And how much time did they waste just like focusing on that dude's abs while he's getting stuff carved in his chest? They just wanted to show off his abs.
Not enough, am I right? Eric slowly pulls his shirt up.
The other thing is like this whole thing where they're like, "Ben, is that you?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm not a little kid anymore. In fact, I'm a billionaire.
And then
I'm great looking.
Here comes
everyone
Bill
wants
Hader.
Me, but I don't want them. I just want you. But I can't tell you that because I'm so shy around you. But I'm really cocky in the boardroom. You should see me in the boardroom." You're like, "What the fuck is this scene?"
And then here comes creepy Bill Hader. "Hey, what the fuck happened to me?"
Yeah. And they fucking get hard ass. Like, get rid of that scene. Make it fucking anybody real, man. Put Adrian Brody in that. I don't know what he's doing these
what
days.
What is he doing these days?
Someone call Adrian Brody, make him Ben in that movie. Anybody. I don't care. I hated that. I'm like, the little like
that
chubby
is a
kid
weird...
becomes ripped out of his mind and it's like chill shit.
I don't even mind that if they wouldn't have shown that he's like such a hard ass in the boardroom. Like it didn't match his character.
I can't tell. Beth's like, "What was that? What was that?" And he's like, "Nothing. Nothing." Like, you guys are the worst.
Here's this note over.
What the fuck was freshman year like?
New kids on the block. Well, so general consensus is we like the first one. They kind of screwed up the second one with some minor moments here and there that we liked, but overall could have been a better effort. Could have been edited better. Could have been shot better. Could have been written better. And James McAvoy is basically Justin Gardner without glasses.
I forgot James McAvoy was even in this, which is not terrible because like I think I criticized every other character. I think he's actually fine.
He was good in this.
He should be.
Like performance wise, he was good in this.
Yeah, like he's like fine. Like
that was another scene.
A fine character in the movie, and James McAvoy's fine. Like you don't remember anything about Bill because Bill's just like.
I just remember that his bike sucks. That's it.
Yeah,
that's my.
I was gonna say that's another scene I forgot to mention. That I think if you take all context out of it and just a scene from beginning to end, like the funhouse mirror stuff, was actually a pretty cool scene.
And that's a scene that also shouldn't exist in the movie. Like when he finds the boy on the street, he's just like, "Hey, boy, no, okay."
Exactly.
Like, you're like, all right. And then he brings him back just to fucking kill him. And it's like, this scene actually makes no logical sense.
But
other than like to beef up the scares.
That goes back to my point. Is like, and I think Eric would probably agree now that he's brought it up. I like the scene as a whole. I don't think it matters that it's in the movie. But if you were just to give me it as like.
Also, how big are these gutters like, in this town?
If you give me 5 more minutes of that scene and just make it a short film, I'm like, all right, I like that. Like there was little things in it where if they were just short films,
Good short films. Like the opening sequence is a good short film.
Right. Yeah.
The sequence under the bleachers is a good short film. The kid in the funhouse is a good short film.
Yeah.
Like, but in this, it's
the grandma
don't matter.
The old lady scene's a good short film.
We need Pennywise webisodes.
Are we sure this isn't an anthology?
It feels kind of like
they tricked
it.
Us.
Yeah. That's a good point. It really does feel like one.
Hey, let's just talk about how mishandled they, like, okay, so I'm sorry, I have to add one more thing.
No, it's just funny.
The Eddie and Richie sequence. So in the book, it was, I remember when I read it, like, I remember being like, was there like a romance there? And I looked it up and there was like all these forms. Like, yes, there is. Stephen King says this and this and this. And it's very ambiguous. But there was like, Stephen King's like, yeah, there's something more there than just a normal friendship. And then like, it was kind of glazed over in the miniseries. First movie, no inclination that there's anything other like that bunch of straight white people and Mike, right?
Yeah,
that's just what we get, and they've all had like kind of weird growing ups. Yeah. And this one, that's like Pennywise, just like they added a weird scene where he's like, "Hey, Eddie or Richie, I know your secret, Richie," mm-hmm. and you're like, "Okay, that's kind of strange."
Yeah.
And then it's like cut to weird ass sequence with Richie, playing Street Fighter and putting a quarter and being like, "We're having a great time. You want to play again? You want to go again?" And then a bunch of guys come in. They're like, "Whoa, that guy's gay." And then him being like, "Whoa, I just want to play Street Fighter." They're like, "Gay." And you're like, "This is so weird." And then he leaves and you're like, "I guess Richie's gay. I don't know what that sequence was. And then, I'm like, Eddie dying and like Richie being like, fuck your mom. And then like, he goes and carves her name in together. And you're like, I guess maybe they had feelings for each other. I don't know what this is saying about like young boys' sexuality or what Richie's going through, but it's very sexually confused. This, in addition to the weird hate crime scene, makes me feel like a bunch of straight old white men wrote this movie. And this is horribly done in 2019. And I was ready for this movie to be railed. In particular, the Street Fighter sequence is so poorly done. Like, just make Richie gay. I don't know what the big deal is about it. He should be openly gay now.
That's our first Patreon t-shirt.
Like, I don't know what that sequence was. It was like, so like, oh, well, we don't want to say it, but like, also we're kind of hinting it. And it's like, no, either he's gay or he's not. And there's nothing wrong with it. But like the way you're doing it makes it seem like there's for sure something wrong with it.
It made me feel super weird to play Super Mario Brothers after that. Just two gay plumbers cleaning out pipes. And then I was like, what if Street Fighter?
It was Street Fighter.
I know, but it made me feel insecure. If that is how the reaction is to Street Fighter, how are people going to react to me playing at Tapcade Super Mario Brothers?
I do love
ridiculous.
Yeah, Ken and Ryu, you know, I don't know. I think that was like, just, did that not, was that not off putting to watch and cringeworthy when you
saw it was bad. Yeah. Like,
it was weird. It was just another scene that was just,
but the
scene,
only purpose of the scene was the hint that he made gay. But you're not hinting at anything. It's like, motherfucker just, is a 12-year-old boy who wants to play another game in an arcade.
And for everything to be his totem. Yeah, and for everything to be his totem, that like random coin was it, from what we know. Like,
it's like, so his totem's a memory of it, like his suppressed like homosexuality.
I don't know.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it would make sense if they wrote it better, but they didn't.
Well, it feels like that was
says the writer.
Thought, like, it's like, I don't know. Just get out of town with that shit, man. If this guy's so cocky and like outward, like in 2019, where the movie's supposed to take place, or it's not 2019, it's like 2017 or whatever.
Yeah.
Talk, man. He's out of the closet at that point. That guy, like that guy, the character we built up, like is cocky and outward, and it's. Like,
but it's a flashback, so it's not like.
Yeah, but now
2019 when they're showing.
Yeah, fine, now he's now still, like he does a comedy routine where he's like my girlfriend or wife.
Yeah.
No. No, if he still has these same thought, I don't. I just that whole they fucked it up even more beyond belief, and it was very awkward to watch, cringeworthy. And then when you get to the scene with him in the bridge, it's like, what is it? And like Pennywise never pays anything off. Pennywise has never been subtle in this whole fucking movie. He turns to Paul Bunny and tries to kill somebody. He's never been subtle. But for some reason with Richie, he's like, hey Richie, I'm being subtle here. You're gay, but he doesn't ever say it. And it's like, but you have no problem literally becoming Bev's fucking step or dad who sexually abused her.
Yeah.
And we have no problem doing like literally becoming an incarnation of his mother who abused him for Eddie. It's like, but you can't be like literally like say what he's supposed to be because the filmmakers are too, I don't know. That was the most.
Yeah.
I was very pissed because they're so on the nose of everything else. And then
like,
opening scene is not like subtle at all. They're like, in 2017, we're all about hate crimes. In 1985, we're racist. But we can't say that this guy's gay or not. The more I thought about it, the more I'm like, this movie kind of deserves to be sent to the other side of whatever the cosmic ray was.
The funny thing is,
we just stand around the movie and tell how bad it is till it goes away. Now
you go away.
Adam was the Adam was the harshest in the critique of it, but you were, Eric, you were the harshest in your grading of it.
Adam's on fire right now.
Yeah, he's lit a fire.
Recalling scenes, I'm just like, remember the dumb serial killer subplot? Remember how they poorly handled the sexual orientation of two characters?
Yeah, you're not wrong. That's why I said I like scenes of it, but didn't
remember
like
when they tore up a whole like Chinese restaurant and then they just walked out like everything was cool.
Yeah, they're all billionaires, so they all like, what do you want, cash?
Right,
I got it in my car.
Here, just take my box that's outside. Well, that concludes our Pennywise analysis. And we ripped a new
analysis
for it, I feel like, but. Basically go watch the first one and just skip the second one.
Yeah, so my kid and I came to that conclusion. Like, we're going to forget that movie like the kids forgot Derry.
Yeah. Well, I'll be looking forward to this prequel. TV series, then you don't have to worry about the second one. You can just go back and in time and start watching it. Watch, if you watch the first film, that's the beginning of it. And then you can just watch backwards and never have to watch the second one. So, not great ratings overall. I think we're averaging, because of Eric's 22%, probably a 50%, like an F. He really dragged it down, and that's maybe appropriately so. But at the end of the day, I still love Bill Skarsgård regardless. It's not his fault. Some of those scenes were made that way. I still like him as a villain. I still like him as that character. Yeah. He's iconic in that sense.
Design and acting is great.
Yeah. That's funny. That's where, like, well, what are the pros? Well, production design and acting were great. But we really, like, laid into everything else that we hated.
Yeah, everything else.
All right. Well, if you have your opinions or want to get in on that rant that Adam just had for 15 minutes about the rage that filled his soul, you can get on Twitter and hashtag ask the creeps and tag at downright creepy. What's everyone's Twitter?
Just my name.
Yeah.
I think you're at Waste of Mind.
There we go.
And you're at Eric Havens. I'm at Casey Canton, but you can at downright creepy. Hashtag ask the creeps on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. And then a little housekeeping, since this is the first episode that we've been back in a while. We are going to use Anchor FM. You can find us on there as the platform. You also find us on Spotify, iTunes, and a few other places wherever you listen to podcasts. You can donate on there if you feel so inclined. 99 cents, I think, is the starting one. I only give it to Adam and I.
Yep.
Make sure Eric does not get it. And then, of course, Patreon. You can subscribe there if you like what we're doing on the site, like we're doing on the podcast. And then a little side note, be sure to check out panicfilmfest.com. That's the film festival I do with this gentleman sitting next to me, Adam Roberts at Screenland.
And Eric might be there too.
We'll be releasing some information on that sometime, probably soon. So keep your eye on that as well. You guys got anything else?
I have a lot of other things, but
save for the Patreon. Okay, well, we'll see you on the next episode. We're hoping to discuss the film Haunt, which is from the writers of A Quiet Place and producer Eli Roth.